Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I'd like to thank everyone for being here tonight. It's always a pleasure to render service to the Vaishnavas. So tonight we'll be reading from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text number 34. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishisi yuktvaivam atmana matparayanaha. Matmana, always thinking of me. Bhava, become. Mat, my. Bhaktaha, devotee. Mat, my. Yaji, worshipper. Mam, unto me. Namaskuru, offer obeisances. Mam, unto me. Eva, completely. Aishasi, you will come. Yuktva, being absorbed. Evam, thus. Atmanam, your soul. Matparayanaha, devoted to me. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Please repeat. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances to me and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. Purport. In this verse, it is clearly indicated that Krishna consciousness is the only means of being delivered from the clutches of this contaminated material world. Sometimes, unscrupulous commentators distort the meaning of what is clearly stated here, that all devotional service should be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Unfortunately, unscrupulous commentators divert the mind of the reader to that which is not at all feasible. Such commentators do not know that there is no difference between Krishna's mind and Krishna. Krishna is not an ordinary human being. He is absolute truth. His body, his mind, and he himself are one and absolute. It is stated in the Kurma Purana, as it is quoted by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami in his Anubhashya comments on Chaitanya Charitamrita, 5th chapter, Adi Lila, verses 41-48. Deha dehi vibhedo yam neshvare vidyate kuchit. This means that there is no difference in Krishna, the Supreme Lord, between himself and his body. But because commentators do not know this science of Krishna, they hide Krishna and divide his personality from his mind or from his body. Although this is sheer ignorance of the science of Krishna, some men make profit out of it, out of misleading people. There are some who are demoniac. They also think of Krishna, but enviously, just like King Kamsa, Krishna's uncle. He was also thinking of Krishna always, but he thought of Krishna as his enemy. He was always in anxiety, wondering when Krishna would come to kill him. But that kind of thinking will not help us. One should be thinking of Krishna in devotional love. That is bhakti. One should cultivate the knowledge of Krishna continuously. What is that favorable cultivation? It is to learn from a bona fide teacher. Krishna is that Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm sorry, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we have several times explained that his body is not material, but eternal, blissful knowledge. This kind of talk about Krishna will help one become a devotee. understanding Krishna otherwise from the wrong source will prove fruitless. One should therefore engage his mind in the eternal form, the primal form of Krishna, with conviction in his heart that Krishna is the Supreme. He should engage himself in worship. There are hundreds of thousands of temples in India for the worship of Krishna, and devotional service is practiced there. When such practice is made, one has to offer obeisances to Krishna. One should lower his head before the deity and engage his mind, his body, his activities, everything. That will make one fully absorbed in Krishna without deviation. This will help one transfer to Krishna Loka. One should not be deviated by unscrupulous commentators. One must engage in the 9 different processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about Krishna. Pure devotional service is the highest achievement of human society. The 7th and 8th chapters of the Bhagavad Gita have explained pure devotional service to the Lord that is free from speculative knowledge, mystic yoga, and fruitive activities. Those who are not purely sanctified may be attracted by different features of the Lord, like the impersonal Brahmajyoti and localized Paramatma, but a pure devotee directly takes to the service of the Supreme Lord. There is a beautiful poem about Krishna in which it is clearly stated that any person who is engaged in the worship of demigods is most unintelligent and cannot achieve at any time the supreme award of Krishna. The devotee in the beginning may sometimes fall from the standard, but still he should be considered superior to all other philosophers and yogis. One who always engages in Krishna consciousness should be understood to be a perfectly saintly person. His accidental, non-devotional activities will diminish, and he will soon be situated without any doubt in complete perfection. The pure devotee has no actual chance to fall down, because the Supreme Godhead personally takes care of his pure devotees. Therefore, the intelligent person should take directly to the process of Krishna consciousness and happily live in this material world. He will eventually receive the supreme award of Krishna. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports, the 9th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the most confidential knowledge. Amagyanati marandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitangena tasmai shri gurave namaha namaham vishnu paraya krishna prasai buddhale shimate paladananda swami nitamane namaham vishnu paraya krishna prasai buddhale shimate bhaktivedanta swami nitamane namaste sarasvati deve gauravani pracharane nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarane. So this verse is so essential for all of us. In fact, for everyone in the world, not just specifically for us who are gathered here in the temple. Because this is the sum and substance of what religious life is about. It's about becoming completely absorbed in thoughts of God and thoughts of Krishna at all times. Many people often wonder, well, what does that actually entail? What does that mean? How do I become absorbed? Most people, they're very absorbed in their daily activities. They wake up in the morning, the first thing they think about is work. Or even as soon as the alarm clock goes off, they may hit snooze one too many times, wake up with a start, their heart in their throat, because they're thinking, oh no, I'm late. Or they wake up and they're thinking about their family. They're thinking about, you know, their long-lost relatives, school. So many things are occupying our mind. And we take these things to be the supreme perfection of existence. If I engage in my daily activities, if I reach perfection of work, if I get that raise, if I get that promotion, if I find that right person, once I have kids, people are thinking these are the goals of life. And they completely absorb their consciousness in thinking about these different things, to the point to where they forget what life is actually about. So that's what Krishna is saying. Krishna is saying that The goal of life is to love Krishna. So, in that regard, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 25, text 12, Queen Kunti is inquiring from her son, Lord Kapiladeva, about the ultimate purpose, the ultimate goal of life. So Maitreya Rishi is narrating this particular history. And from this particular verse, Maitreya Rishi is saying, after hearing his mother's uncontaminated desire for transcendental realization, the Lord thanked her within himself for her questions. And thus, his smiling face, he explained the path of transcendentalists who are interested in self-realization. So a very important word from this verse is Upavarga Vardhanam. So some of us may or may not have heard about Upavarga before. And Vardhanam means path. But what Pavarga is describing our experience here in this material world. Because within the construction of the Sanskrit language, there's different vargas. There's five different vargas. There's kavarga, chavarga, tavarga, tavarga, and pavarga. So pavarga is specifically referring to the material world. So there's pa and pa, ba and pa and ma. Pa means parishrama, simply laboring, hard work. And so much hard labor that now there's a pa, which means pinna or foam. So you work so hard day and night that foam starts to come from the mouth. You'll see that in animals sometimes. You know, you work an animal very, very hard, or even, for instance, not even work, but a dog. So many people in America have dogs. And they run their dog very hard. And then what's the dog do? He's foaming at the mouth. There's foam around the corners of his mouth. Because it's so much hard labor. And so also that comes with that is dry throat. Dry throat, dry mouth, foaming. And then what's next? Next is ba. There's ba and pa. Ba means bhaya. And ba means yarta. Yarta means futile. It's a futile effort. It has no ultimate goal, no ultimate reward. And we can see that, you know, so many people working so hard day and night. So busy all the time, working so hard, they don't even have time to practically sit down and have a bite to eat properly. Eating when they're standing up, eating on the run, can't even give proper attention to health. Everything gets pushed to the wayside for the almighty dollar. And then pa. Pa comes from bhaya, or fear. Everyone's laboring so hard out of fear. They're fearful for their own maintenance, their own survival. If I don't work very hard, who will maintain me? Who will see to the necessities of this body? Who will keep this family together? And then it always ends in ma. Ma comes from marna, or mrityu. Mrityu means death. So this is what people are so enraptured with, completely absorbed in, working hard all life long until we die. And that's it. And then you get another birth. And then we can do the whole cycle all over again. Study when we're young. Learn how to become a good laborer or a highly skilled laborer through college. Get a nice job. Work very, very hard until we foam at the mouth and then die. And then we can do it again. And this is life. And people are thinking, oh yes, well this is what life is all about. This is the perfection of existence. I get some nice family. I have some nice children. I work very hard. I can't see my children because I'm all the time working. Then my children are grown up and they go away and they have their own family and they don't have time for me because they're working very hard now too. They're foaming at the mouth. So this isn't the purpose of life. People have forgotten what life is about. People think that life is about pavarga, the miseries of material existence. Life is about apavarga. Apavarga means how to increase interest in liberation. Like Queen Kunti. She was inquiring, how do I get freed from this material existence? And that's why her question was very much appreciated. There I am. Sorry, I'm a little bit disorganized. Anyway, so then also, Prahlad Maharaj mentions later on in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, talking about how everyone's simply chewing the chewed over and over again. So we're always chewing the chewed of this pavarga. We've chewed it so many times, and every time we chew it, we realize that there's no taste in it. It's like if somebody chews a piece of gum. There may be a little bit of taste, you know, something. And then it disappears. It goes away. We're thinking, oh, this is, you know, not so nice. Throw it out. Somebody else picks it up. Oh, look at this piece of gum. Maybe there's some taste left. They pick it up, put it in their mouth, start chewing. No, there's nothing in this. They spit it out. Somebody else comes along. Ooh, look at this nice piece of gum. Start chewing on it. Hey, there's no taste. They spit it out. The example that Prabhupada always gave was that of sugar cane. Because sugar cane is something very nice. Anyone who's eaten sugar cane, it's like, oh, so nice. Very sweet. But then after chewing it for some time, there's nothing left. Then you spit it out. But it still looks like there may be something in there because, you know, it has the nice husk. And so you try to chew it again. But there's nothing there. So lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, we're chewing this chewed. Over and over and over again. So how to get out of this? We have to inquire about liberation. We have to inquire about the ultimate purpose, the real goal of life. Atatto Brahma Jigyasa. That's from the Vedanta Sutra. Translation is, now inquire into the nature of the Absolute Truth. Now refers to the fact that now that we have a human body, now that we have this very rare human form of life, we have to make proper use of it. And how do we properly use it? Brahma Jigyasa. Brahman, the Absolute Truth. Jigyasa, inquiring. So we have to make this transcendental inquiry. And the ultimate purpose of life is to engage in Krishna's service, to develop this lost relationship with Krishna within our heart. This relationship is all the time existing, it's just that we've forgotten about it. And so we simply need to rekindle it. Like it says in the Bhagavatam, that religion which develops this pure love for God within the heart, that is first class. This is non-sectarian. This isn't about being Hindu. This isn't about being Christian. This isn't about being Muslim or Buddhist or whatever you want to call yourself. This is about rekindling and redeveloping this transcendental identity that we all have. And how to do this? Krishna says it right here. Engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer your obeisances to me. And worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. You know, so then oftentimes the question may come up, well, how do I do this if I'm in a situation where I have all these encumbrances, or I have responsibilities, or I have people to maintain. So Krishna also goes through that in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, texts 15 through 19. He specifically addresses this very thing. Krishna says, regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. So this is the important thing here, sacrifice. Everyone has to engage in sacrifice, whether we're sacrificing for our family or sacrificing for Krishna, for God. My dear Arjuna, one who does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice thus established by the Vedas certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. So this is what happens. This is when we get caught up in pavarga. It's a futile existence. It's a life lived in vain that has no purpose or meaning to it. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satisfied, for him there is no duty. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties. And this is very important. Nor has he any reason not to perform such work. Nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty. For by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. So this is very important, these teachings from this section of the Bhagavad Gita. It explains how to, in a very practical way, how to still maintain the necessities of our existence, but at the same time, be absorbed in Krishna while we do it. So those who are engaged in pavarga, they're also trying to enjoy the fruits of their useless activities. Most people are working very hard to get some money so they can buy whatever things they want to enjoy. But this doesn't provide any real satisfaction. So Krishna is explaining here that we should engage in sacrifice. Sacrifice doesn't mean some bloody endeavor. Doesn't mean we're killing someone, you know, to sacrifice to some false idol or, you know, something bloody that's described in other books. That's not sacrifice. Sacrifice means sacrificing our endeavor, means sacrificing our time, means sacrificing our consciousness. Because those who are aspiring for loving devotional service to Krishna, we have to at least engage in activities in the modes of goodness. And the sacrifices in the modes of goodness are things that are very, very peaceful. And things that don't require a whole lot of bodily discomfort and pain. So that's why things like blood sacrifices aren't asked for by Krishna. So what Krishna is asking for is, he's asking that we sacrifice the results of our activities. That we be unattached to these results, because we actually have no proprietorship over these results. Just like if you work for some company, and say you're a manufacturer. Someone working for a car manufacturer. They're getting all these raw materials, and they're producing automobiles out of these raw materials. But the raw materials don't belong to them. So if they decided, well, I'll just drive off from the factory in one of these brand new vehicles I just made, well, that would be considered theft. They would be prosecuted according to the law. Because this result of their activity does not belong to them. In the same way, the results of our activities, because we're here in this material world, They do not belong to us. We came into this world with nothing, and we leave this world with nothing. Everything that we're experiencing in this material world does not belong to us. It belongs to Krishna. Krishna is supplying the raw ingredients for everything that we're experiencing in our life. So everything that we do in this lifetime is just like that auto manufacturer, manufacturing so many nice automobiles, but he has no right to claim any one of those because none of it belongs to him. In the same way, none of our activities, even though we may be thinking of ourselves as some big businessman, as some very successful professional, very famous, very powerful, whatever, rich, none of it belongs to us. Krishna is saying you have to become renounced. You have to renounce, you have to give up these fruits. Because if you don't give it up now, you'll certainly have to give it up when you leave this body. But the only side effect of giving it up when you're forced to by leaving this body by death, by ma, mrityu, then you'll be held liable for all the karma accrued by selfishly claiming proprietorship to all these reactions, to all these fruits of your activities. And you'll be held liable in your next life according to what karma, according to what fruits you have claimed as your own. So another example of how to practically do this, what Krishna has described in the third chapter, comes from the Chaitanya Charitamrita from the Madhya Lila, seventh chapter, texts 126 through 129. This is when Lord Chaitanya is going on his South Indian tour, and he's going through a province known as Kormadesh. And when he's there in Kormadesh, he goes to this house of one Brahmin. And this Brahmin, he was particularly successful in life. He had a nice family. He was very wealthy. He was very well respected. He had some nice children. A very respectable material existence in all regards. And yet when Lord Chaitanya came, what did the Brahmin ask? He said, he begged Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "My dear Lord, kindly show me favor and let me go with you. I can no longer tolerate the waves of misery caused by materialistic life." And here is this Brahmin, very successful person. He has very little miseries in material existence. He doesn't have to worry about his income or his social status or how his family is going to be maintained. Everything is very comfortable for him. And yet at the same time, because he realizes that the purpose of life is for upavarga, for transcendence, therefore he's saying, "I can't tolerate these waves caused by materialistic life anymore. Please let me come with you." But Lord Chaitanya replied, he said, "Don't speak like that again. Better to remain at home and chant the holy names of Krishna always." Because the thing is, this Brahmin, he wasn't fully ready to give up family life. He hadn't awakened his Krishna consciousness yet. So Lord Chaitanya was recommending to him, no, better is that you stay in what position you already find yourself in. And that's also the teachings of the previous acharyas. Whatever position you find yourself in when you come to Krishna consciousness, you stay in that position and engage in Krishna's activities. Engage in your daily affairs, but be renounced. Don't claim proprietorship over the results of your activities, because those belong to Krishna, so give them to Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya goes even further in a very famous verse, text 128. Yare deke tare kaha Krishna upadesh, amara agyaya guru hanya tare desh. This translates, "Instruct everyone to follow the orders of Lord Sri Krishna, as they are given in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, become a spiritual master and try to liberate everyone in this land. So this is what our mission is. This is what we're all here to do. We're all here to act for Krishna. And this is the sublime mission also of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This is our entire purpose and our whole mission. We simply request everyone to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's such an easy process and it's very joyfully done. It doesn't require any great qualification. It doesn't require for you to be rich or wealthy or powerful. It doesn't require any of this. We can chant the Maha Mantra in any circumstance, in any time, in any place. Like there is this one devotee, his name is Sarvabhauma. And he was one of the first devotees to be preaching in Russia, back before the Iron Curtain fell. And it was extremely intolerable circumstances in which he found himself. Because at the time, the KGB, because there were actually devotees whose parents were KGB officials. And they told us later that the KGB actually had an extremely large file on us, on the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And they deemed us actually as one of the greatest threats to socialism, to communism. And Prabhupada even said that. Prabhupada said, you distribute these books behind the Iron Curtain in Russia and chant the holy names and communism will fail. And that's factually what happened. And so these devotees there were out chanting Harinam, distributing books, and they got arrested time and time again by the police. And then they stayed in jail for a couple of days and then they were released. And so the devotees were thinking, well, this is just the game of cat and mouse that we play. Until finally, one time they were arrested and they weren't released. They were held for months and months on months. And they were telling these devotees, you know, if you renounce your religion, if you renounce Krishna consciousness, we'll let you go. You can live a nice, comfortable life and you'll just be free to, you know, live like everyone else. But they refused. They're thinking, no, what's life worth? What life is worth living if you can't be Krishna conscious? And so they stayed. And they also knew that if they would have done that, if they would have given up Krishna consciousness, it would have made it more difficult for all the other devotees in Russia. And so they were just being beaten horrendously there while they were in prison, almost on a daily basis. Because there was this one guard, and the guard was told by his wife, if you don't beat these crazy people, then I won't have sex with you at night. And so he made it a very pointed issue to drag out these devotees and beat them mercilessly every single day. Till finally one day he became a little overzealous in his abuse and torture. And he almost broke this devotee's face in, literally, just almost caved it in. And so, one of the devotees, he was a very peaceful devotee. And he never in his life had any sort of anger or vengeance. But he just couldn't stand to see the abuse heaped upon this other devotee. It wasn't for his own benefit. He tolerated his own beating. But seeing his fellow devotee being beaten, he just couldn't tolerate this. And so from the bottom of his heart, he cursed this jailer. He said, whatever piety I have, I curse you that you can never do this again because I can't tolerate to see this. And so shortly after, that very night actually, when the jailer went home, before he went home, he was with his wife and his family, his whole family, his children even also, and he got really drunk. And when he was driving home, he ran off the road and his whole family died in the car accident. And so then later on, the next day, actually, all the jailers, they were very scared of the devotees because they all knew this curse. And so the devotees were thinking, you know, this is weird. You know, what's going on? Why are they treating us like this? Where's our daily beating? You know, and then so they asked the guards, and they said, well, you know, what happened? You know, why are you treating us so differently all of a sudden? And they said, well, you know, that one guard who used to beat you really badly, he and his whole family just died. So, you know, we know that this Krishna has some real power, you know, and we don't want to upset you or offend you in any way. So from then on, they were still in prison, but they, you know, the beating stopped. And so this one devotee, a friend of Sarvabhauma, he was getting very, very ill. I forget what his name is. But he knew that he was going to leave his body. And he knew that they wouldn't let him out of prison. And he was becoming so weak, he couldn't even get out of bed anymore. And so one day he asked his prison mate, who was a devotee, you know, please, you know, put this sheet on me. And so he wore this sheet like a dhoti. And he tore up another sheet as a chadar. And then he got some toothpaste. And he applied the toothpaste on his body like tilak. And because the beads were forbidden, they weren't allowed to have beads. So he had made some beads out of bread, dried bread. He took the bread and he squished it up into little balls and left it to dry and become almost like fossilized in the windows of the jail cell to be baked by the sun. And so then he strung these breadcrumbs together, and that's what he would chant on. And then after he was dressed like this, his roommate came back in later on in the day and saw him there sitting so blissfully, this big smile on his face, his beads in hand. And he went up to him and he was trying to talk to him, but he wasn't responding. So he just gave him a little touch and his body collapsed. And he realized that he left his body right there in prison. You know, so even under the most trying circumstances, even being beaten horrendously every single day, still these devotees were chanting. So the point is, there's no material impediments. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, what your economic position is, what religion you come from. None of this matters. This is open and available to everyone. And so then Lord Chaitanya continues. He says, he further advised the Brahmin Korma, if you follow this instruction, your materialistic life at home will not obstruct your spiritual advancement. Indeed, if you follow these regulative principles, we will meet again here, or rather, you will never lose my company. So this is very important because we all want Lord Chaitanya's company. Or we all should want Lord Chaitanya's company. And so this is a very important instruction that Lord Chaitanya has given to the Korma Brahmin. You know, to always preach. Whomever you meet, whomever you see, just preach this Krishna consciousness. Become a guru. Teach people about Krishna. Teach people about me. Because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself. And Lord Chaitanya, he didn't just say things and then not also do it himself. You know, he came to break open this storehouse of pure love of God and distribute it freely to everyone. So whenever Krishna comes and incarnates, he's always accompanied by his associates, and especially by Lord Balaram. Like you see here, there's Lord Jagannath, Lord Baladev, and Subhadra Devi. And so Balaram, he always comes to assist Krishna in whatever mission he has. So when Lord Chaitanya comes, this is Krishna coming in the mood of Srimati Radharani to spread his devotional service throughout the whole world. And so Lord Nityananda, who by the way his appearance day is coming up soon on the 16th, and so Lord Nityananda, he always is assisting Lord Chaitanya in this mission. Lord Nityananda, he's the embodiment of preaching. He would go out every day with Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, he's the Nam Acharya. Acharya means like spiritual preceptor or a very advanced spiritual teacher. And Nam means the holy names. So he came from a very degraded background. He was born in a Muslim family, which at the time was considered very, very degraded because they ate meat, they drank alcohol, they did all sorts of abominable activities. And he was born into such a family. And yet he was elevated because of his activities. He was so addicted to chanting the holy names of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He was so addicted to this process of chanting the holy names that he would chant 192 rounds every single day. That's a lot. That would take us a long time to do. I don't know if anyone's ever tried, but usually the mind gets in the way before we can get up there even halfway. And so he was never quenched in his thirst for chanting the holy names. And so he would go out with Lord Nityananda on a daily basis. And they would go from village to village, from town to town, knocking on every door. And Haridas Thakur, he was always so humble. So he would take the extremely humble position that as soon as the door opened, he would pay his dandavats. Right there in the door. So then people wouldn't have a chance to close the door before they could say the holy names. Because when they would close the door, it would close on his body. And there would be this big crack in the door. And Lord Nityananda, he would dive through that opening in the door and roll around wildly on the ground, crying out, "Chant the names of Hari! Chant the names of Hari!" And they wouldn't leave until they would chant, "Hari! Hari!" Hari is one of the names of Krishna also. Hari means he who removes all obstacles to our devotion. And so they would do like this. They'd go around from town to town and chant the holy names and encourage everyone else to chant. So this is also very beneficial for us to follow in the footsteps of Lord Nityananda. By pleasing Lord Nityananda, we can please Lord Chaitanya. By pleasing Lord Chaitanya, then we can please Srimati Radharani. And by pleasing Srimati Radharani, we can please Krishna. Without Radharani's mercy, nothing is possible. Because she is the topmost of all devotees. Nobody loves Krishna more than her. We can't even compare. Her love is so intense for Krishna that Krishna has given himself to her. He's made himself her property. She owns Krishna. So if any of us want to get Krishna, we can't get Krishna unless we get Radharani's mercy. Because Krishna is her property. So therefore, the best way of getting Srimati Radharani's mercy is by getting Lord Nityananda's mercy. Lord Nityananda's mercy is very easily available. Very, very easy to attain. And we get that by preaching, by spreading this message of Krishna to everyone we meet. Because that's his mission. And Lord Nityananda appreciates it very much whenever he gets any assistance from anyone in the mission that he was given directly by Lord Chaitanya. And so we should seriously take this up. We should stay in whatever position we find ourselves in and become Krishna conscious, chant the holy names, renounce the fruits of our activities, and tell everyone about Krishna. And this way, we'll actually attain perfection in life. So it's just about 6 o'clock. If there's any comments or questions. Yes? Mm-hmm. Well, it's more than just religion. It's actually dharma. Krishna says, sarva dharman prityaja. Give up all dharmas. Dharma is very all-encompassing. Dharma means duty. Dharma also means, ultimately, the ultimate sense of dharma means that which cannot change. So we have to give up all false ideas of dharma. Religion being one such dharma. Even religion one has to renounce. Because religion is a man-made thing. Religion is words, different trappings that we put on describing this relationship that we have with God, with Krishna. That's why this is a non-sectarian movement, this Krishna consciousness. It's not a religion. You know, this is actually a practical method, a practical means by which we can rekindle this loving relationship with Krishna. And so we have to renounce, we have to give up, cast aside all false senses of duty. For most people in this material world, they're perceiving pavarga to be their duty. Work very hard until they foam at the mouth and then drop dead. So we have to give up all these false ideas and simply take to Krishna consciousness. Is that okay? Yes. You're saying if we give these dharmas, then what happens? No, not at all. Because the ultimate dharma, the ultimate duty, because ultimately what does dharma mean? Dharma means that which cannot change, that which is fixed and immutable. So what is our ultimate dharma? What is our ultimate duty that never changes? That is being a servant. Being a servant of Krishna. So even the Pandavas were trying to do their mundane duty, observe these four lakh of mundane dharma. You know, like Yudhisthira. He refused to lie, even though Krishna was personally there and Krishna told him, "You lie. Do this because I'm telling you." But he hesitated. So what was the result of doing that mundane dharma? He had to see hell. The ultimate dharma is surrendering to Krishna. The ultimate dharma is surrendering to God and engaging in His service. We have to give up all these false ideas of dharma and mundane piety, because mundane piety is simply pavarga, working very hard until we foam at the mouth in frivolous activities and then we die. So best to engage in Krishna's service. Anything else? Lord Nityananda comes in the mood of the servant of Krishna. Lord Nityananda, he is directly Lord Baladev himself. Lord Baladev is Krishna's first expansion. And Lord Baladev, his love is so intense and so strong for Krishna that he wants to be everything for Krishna. Lord Baladev is even the very shoes that Krishna walks on. He's all his paraphernalia, everything. And so whatever it is that Krishna wants to do, Lord Baladev is the first person there to assist him. That's Lord Baladev's mood, no matter what he's doing, no matter what form he takes. Just whatever it takes to assist Krishna in whatever pastime he's engaged in, that's his mood. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.